This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. The rise of the managed accounts sector has ramped up in recent years. At the end of 2024, managed accounts had $233 billion in assets, according to the Institute of Managed Account Professionals, or IMAP. This is not far behind the ETF sector's size of $247 billion. But while ETFs are now mainstream, managed accounts remain in the margins, sidelined as investments familiar to only a select few. So to provide an explainer on what managed accounts exactly are, we have today the founder and managing director of Suitability Hub, Richep Pekka. Richep, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Karen, for having us today.
Firstly, let's talk about your business and what you do there and why you established it.
Suitability Hub is an institutional-grade due diligence tool that's designed for financial advisors to research platforms and manage accounts. Our idea is to help you go beyond fees and performance to facilitate a more holistic decision-making process when you're researching platforms and managed accounts. This includes assessing them by their investment approach, features and functionality, and other services and benefits that they deliver to advisors and their practices.
So I know you're a managed accounts expert. So if you could tell us what exactly are managed accounts, and they're known by other names like model portfolios, and if you can give a rundown of just a simple explanation of what they are.
Yeah, so managed accounts, at its simplest form, are professionally managed investment portfolios where investors own the underlying investments directly. I like to compare them to managed funds. Like if you think about the traditional managed funds that advisors are more used to, I see those as unitized, pooled investment vehicles through which investors don't necessarily have direct ownership of the underlying assets. Whereas managed accounts, what they're doing is they're facilitating direct ownership. Now, through the industry, there are multiple ways of referring to managed accounts, which causes some confusion. Sometimes they're called managed portfolios. Sometimes they're called model portfolios. Sometimes they have other terms. The way to distinguish between them, as an example, model portfolios, this is actually something that's been around since the early 2010s as a technology that was developed by platform providers to more efficiently enable advisors to manage their clients' assets in bulk. So they're different to managed accounts, but strictly speaking, the way we see model portfolios are these technology solutions where the advisor or the licensee can create different portfolios on a platform. And whenever a new client comes in, get assigned to one of those portfolios and then be rebalanced in line with those portfolios and invest in the same assets as others in those portfolios. And generally speaking, these portfolios, whenever they're changed, whenever the underlying holdings are changed and the like, the advisor needs to go and get client consent. They need to do a record of advice or something similar, get the client consent, and then execute those trades. Managed accounts are essentially a more investment structure, depending on if you're looking at SMAs, MDAs, or IMAs. They have different ways of operating, but their main premise is essentially not needing that constant client signature every time you're making a portfolio change. So I think, Karen, like as we talk more about these, I'll refer to separately managed accounts as SMAs and managed discretionary accounts as MDAs, and also individually managed accounts as IMAs.
Let's break those down just quickly, what they stand for and maybe the differences between them.
Yeah. So in its simplest form, the way to think about it is that SMAs are a product while MDAs and IMAs are a service. What do I mean by product? So if you look at SMAs, each SMA on each platform comes with a product disclosure statement. And advisors, they essentially access, in a simplest form, they access SMAs just the way they would be buying managed funds for a client portfolio. They tend to go onto the menu, choose the SMAs, it could be one or a mix of SMAs, multiple SMAs, to construct a portfolio for clients based on those clients' objectives. And then unlike a unitized managed fund, the SMA is separately managed. So essentially what happens is the SMAs that the advisor buys, the assets within them are kept separate to that individual investor.
I see. Okay?
And investors can easily see the, you know, holdings within these SMAs anytime, unlike with a unitized managed fund.
So they could be either a service or a product.
So that's specifically SMAs are
product. Yep.
So yeah, MDAs, these are similar to SMAs, but an advice service, not a financial product. So
yes,
there's, generally speaking, there's an agreement in place where the investor provides the manager authority to manage a portfolio on their behalf and transact on the investments on their behalf. And this manager, it could be a financial advisor with a, you know, who's authorized by ASIC to either provide MDA advice and act as an investment manager, or it could be a third-party specialist portfolio manager that's running the portfolios. So generally, MDAs tend to be more tailored than SMAs are, and they're used by advisors with tailored investment mandates for their clients. So the advisor and the client agree on the portfolio objectives, and then the advisor or the manager can trade at their discretion without seeking additional authority from clients each time to transact on the underlying investments.
Interesting.
Yes. IMAs, meanwhile, they build upon MDAs. They're also a service, but they don't require an agreement to be in place for the management. These are generally highly bespoke portfolios for high net worth individuals. The assets within these are held off platform through services like implemented portfolio solutions, where it's just a highly customized asset selection that isn't restricted to the more traditional investments you get access to on platforms. And there's strong considerations around, you know, tax optimization, et cetera, and their construction. So generally speaking, like SMAs are the most widely used by financial advisors as a whole. And those who want a bit more, you know, or a lot more tailoring, opt for MDAs in the upper end of town that's focused on, you know, those who are in private wealth advisory businesses. They're using things like IMAs to deliver highly bespoke portfolios to their high net worth clients.
So let's get to the nitty gritty a bit now and talk about how managed accounts are structured, as in like, who are the providers, who are the platforms, for example?
Yeah. So the structure generally involves three parties. There is usually an investment manager or an asset consultant who's setting the portfolio and making decisions at a discretionary basis.
Mm-hmm.
So investment managers, you know, they operate similar to the typical fund managers that we're used to. And a lot of investment managers do have managed fund portfolios that they run, unitized managed fund portfolios that they run. While asset consultants, they typically work closer with practices that essentially to deliver portfolios that are closely aligned with the firm's investment philosophy, right? So, you know, one way of thinking about it is, for example, let's say I buy into the Vanguard way of investing or the Dimensional way of investing their funds. I can go and buy their SMAs through platforms to essentially get access to that investment approach. Or I can find an asset consultant. I might have my own view around how portfolios should be run and find an asset consultant who will work with my business to create portfolios that are more aligned with my investment philosophy. So in either case, you know, like so if asset consultants can really take the investment selection and decision-making piece out of advisors' hands. So they focus less on picking investments and more on the strategy. But because they're still working with the asset consultant through the investment committee meetings and the like, they're still influencing like how those portfolios are invested as well. So investment managers and asset consultants is one of the parties. Platforms is another key component of the managed account puzzle. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they typically administer the account, execute the trades, provide the reporting on it. Most platforms act as a responsible entity or RE on the portfolios. So this is required for SMAs, not for MDAs, because like I said, SMAs are a financial product. The RE, essentially, it means the platform becomes a licensed entity that's operating the managed investment scheme or the SMA. They issue the PDS. They have a role of, you know, being a trustee and a manager of the investment scheme. So they ensure that the investment manager is adhering to the investment mandate of the portfolios and essentially provide that level of assurance. Mm. And then when it comes to the broader functionality, you know, advisors are using platforms to buy, hold, administer the client's SMA holdings. The, you know, the platform capability influences the sort of outcomes that they can achieve, like running those or holding those SMAs for their clients. Yeah, and the final piece of the puzzle is, of course, the financial advisor, mm-hmm. who is typically the individual recommending the portfolio and monitoring it, making, you know, potentially substitutions or exclusions at the individual client level to make sure that they're getting the most you know, appropriate outcome. And some advisors also, you know, if they have the appropriate license, are running the portfolios themselves as well, or involved in that process.
That's a great segue to the next question, as in who uses managed accounts or invests in them? And do you need a financial advisor to be invested in the managed accounts?
So yeah, that's a very good question. So nowadays, most financial advisors recommend managed accounts. So it used to be, I remember when I started in the industry in 2006, it was a very small share of financial advisors who were writing managed accounts. And the flows going in there as a share of the total flows was relatively small. In fact, the first financial planning practice I started working in, we used to recommend Dalton Nicol Reed and Ralton's SMA. So some of the managers have been around for a very, very long time. But it wasn't until the mid-2010s that managed accounts really started to take off. So we got to a point where essentially the industry hit critical mass from an education perspective that really drove financial advisor adoption of managed accounts. And now, if you look at the latest stats from the State Street Global Advisors Investment Trends Managed Accounts report, 59% of financial advisors are using or recommending managed accounts. So that compares to 20% in 2015. It's the share doing so has tripled in 10 years.
Amazing.
That's why I say, you know, the majority of financial advisors now recommend SMAs. The thing about it, though, is traditionally SMAs used to hold, you know, just direct shares and required larger balances to get the full diversification benefits for their clients. Another thing that's essentially changed over the last few years is, number one, a lot more platforms enable advisors to invest in managed accounts. Mm-hmm. So in the past, it was either the manager's own platform, which was just specialized in accessing their SMAs, or very few platforms that were built to be managed account engines. So Hub24, OneView, they came out with SMAs at their heart. And then other platforms, like, they added that managed account capability down the track. So now we've had a situation where there's more platforms, or pretty much every platform now offers managed accounts, specifically SMAs. There's also a much wider variety of SMAs available. So they're not just holding direct shares, but they're holding a mix of, you know, managed funds or ETFs or other assets as well, which just means that more advisors are able to use SMAs to deliver the full asset allocation that a client might need in their portfolio, as opposed to just a sleeve of their portfolio. And the thing about holding managed funds or ETFs in managed accounts means that you can essentially enable more investors, like investors of lower balances, to access these SMAs. So, you know, we've gone from an environment where very few advisors could do so through a limited number of platforms for clients with high value balances, to now, you know, majority of advisors have access to them. Most platforms enable you to access them. And the SMAs you hold can help you realize the full asset allocation benefits. And now we have some great new technology coming from platforms as well that is essentially has the potential to democratize investing in SMAs. So a good example of this is fractional shares within the North platform. Mm-hmm. What that means is, as an advisor, you can recommend SMA comprised of listed securities to clients of any balance. So it doesn't have to be a high net worth. It could be someone with $10, $100, whatever, $1,000. And the fact that it's fractionalized means that the investor doesn't need to hold each stock in full. They can hold a fraction of a share of the stock to get access to that. So the industry is really, really shifting. And that is, it's SMAs, you know, to answer your question on who uses them, it's gone from select few for a select audience to now the majority do and the majority can.
And what do you think are the benefits or maybe even the disadvantages of managed accounts?
There's a few things in play here, and it really comes down to what outcome the financial advisor is after as well. A lot of the growth in the use of SMAs has been driven by things like advisors' demand for efficiency and scale. There's the investor preferences around greater transparency and better tax or more individualized tax outcomes. Essentially, you know, there's the regulatory push towards best interest duty that plays a role as well. So when you look across the benefits, essentially clients benefit from more efficient portfolio management or more individualized portfolio management. Mm. Even, you know, earlier I was saying SMAs, they're essentially a product, right? Where financial advisors buy something off the shelf and then they get access to the investments held within those SMAs. The thing is, a lot of platforms offer the capability to tailor those SMAs. So you can set exclusions. So don't buy a specific asset because my client might have a directorship with that company, or substitutions. So instead of buying this asset, buy another asset. Those sort of things, you know, and that could be linked to tax-related reasons as well. So you never sell this asset because my client has a lot of CGT in that asset. So these sort of tailoring has a distinct benefit for the end client. They get more efficient portfolio outcomes for themselves. It's also more efficient from a tax perspective. So in a unitized, pooled, managed fund, the essentially capital gains tax within it or other taxes that the fund incurs, that's kind of like spread across the investors within it. Whereas separately managed accounts, each portfolio is separate to the individual, right? So they don't get disadvantaged by any tax consequences that's been, you know, built up in the managed fund.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, financial advisors, they benefit from time savings and reduced operational risk. So one of the big differences when it comes to, you know, managed funds versus SMAs is the transacting that happens within the SMA, right? Or within the discretionary structure, you don't need to go and get client authority for each of those to happen. So you don't need to generate a record of advice. You don't need to collect client signatures, and then you don't have to follow it up with the, you know, execution on the platform. One thing to note is SMAs, like if you're switching between SMAs or rebalancing at like the SMA level, yes, you need a ROA in that instance, like you need to get client authority. But whatever happens within the SMA, like if you have an asset consultant and you've blended, you know, a growth in the defensive portfolio in a certain way to give your client the risk profile that you're after, any transacting that happens within that, that's where you don't need the things like the ROAs and the client authorities. So advisors save a lot of time that way from a compliance perspective. Advisors save a lot of time from picking stocks or investments themselves. So they don't need to be as involved in the portfolio management. They can essentially, you know, focus their time on like other tasks or activities. Coming back to client benefits, so the transparency piece is very, very important because you can, you know, anytime log into your platform and see the underlying holdings within the SMA and their allocation and how each of them are going. And we also spoke about like the direct ownership of the individual securities. Like the idea here is you're only paying like the tax, like, or the transaction fees or what have you when it applies to your specific portfolio. So you get a more fair outcome overall. Now, one, you know, when you ask about like the downsides, there's one which some advisors, like I've heard in the past talking about as a negative before, like they often change their mind about it, which is you're essentially, when you use something like SMA or MDA, to an extent, you're outsourcing the portfolio management.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're an advisor who's built your value proposition around investment selection or portfolio management, this kind of contradicts your value proposition. It goes against what you've essentially built your business around. So for that style of advisor, like an SMA might not necessarily be as suitable because they want to demonstrate like they're adding value through the portfolio construction. Whereas for other financial advisors, they say, this is not my expertise. I don't want to be involved in portfolio selection. Instead, I want to focus on my clients' goals, how they're tracking towards the goals and how we can better meet those goals and really have a proposition that's designed around better serving the clients, almost like a, you know, financial coach or mentor, and you know, focusing on their personal needs and objectives rather than the portfolio selection piece. Another difficulty around managed accounts has been around like finding the ideal partner. So there's a lot of SMA managers and asset consultants in the market right now. Many of them have quite distinct ways of constructing portfolios, investing the money, like the investment approach or the investment philosophy tends to vary quite substantially. So this is a sort of problem we're solving through Suitability Hub, our research software. We're allowing advisors to go in and assess managers based on the experience of the portfolio manager, their investment philosophy, their asset allocation targets, past performance, fees across the various platforms. Because at the end of the day, some advisors say like it can take up to a year to find the ideal partner.
Wow.
to use for SMAs. Like it's in a sense, like in some ways it's like a marriage in that you're aligning your investment philosophy with the manager's investment philosophy so that when you do your client reviews, like you can tell a consistent story around what's happening in the markets, how this is affecting the portfolio, why the manager is making certain decisions, and what's the outlook ahead. And so if you're not aligned with your investment manager's philosophy, you're going to find it much harder to tell the story to your clients.
Interesting.
Than if you find someone where you're closely aligned with their investment approach.
And finally, what do you see is the future for managed accounts? Does it look bright in your eyes?
Yeah, so we work very closely with platforms to understand how they're serving this market. And we also work closely with investment managers around their propositions. And the main thing is there's a lot more flexibility, customizability, and choice coming for financial advisors. So, you know, earlier I mentioned how, you know, the North platform, for example, they're offering fractional shares, meaning that more people can access SMAs. There's a lot of other initiatives happening by platforms that directly benefit from the end client. So for example, when you invest in an SMA, sometimes the SMA manager will negotiate with the fund managers within the SMA to provide a rebate that can be passed on to the client. Or the advisor might negotiate with the fund manager to receive a rebate that can get pass on to a client. Now, some platforms allow those rebates to be provided by ETF issuers as well and passed on to end clients. So if the licensee or the advisor has negotiated the ETF issuer to provide a discount for the client, that sort of thing can now be administered by platforms. We're seeing more and more sophisticated rebalancing algorithms coming into the market. So making sure that clients' transaction volume is minimized, like they're not incurring the cost of constantly changing the holdings in the portfolio. There's more like smart logic around when the platform transacts, how it transacts. You know, even if the manager comes and says, hey, let's change the portfolio to a certain extent, making sure that if it's within certain tolerance limits, the client isn't actually transacting on that and getting the CGT impact or the transaction fees. Platforms like Hub24, I think Hub's actually the only platform that does this. They have something called progressive portfolio implementation. What that means is, you know, they give tools to investment managers where they might have been holding something in the SMA since day one, and then decide that it's gotten to a point where it's kind of the valuation is where they expected the, you know, the stock or the fund to reach. What they can do is set that investment aside so that anyone who's already been holding it continues to hold it and they're not affected by CGT from selling it, and then have a replacement asset in place for any new investor or new funds that go into the SMA. So really enabling portfolios to be personalized for clients at a greater, in a more scalable way. And there's solutions like, you know, Briefcase that are coming out, and they're saying, we can allow you to essentially have individualized or personalized access to to the index for your clients at scale by holding some of the underlying shares in the SMAs. Other developments here come in the form of holding restricted liquidity assets. So typically in a SMA, like you'll hold managed funds or ETFs or shares that can be bought or sold relatively rapidly. More and more platforms are offering the capability to hold investments where they're not as liquid. You can't sell it straight away, or maybe you can't sell it for a set number of years. And being able to facilitate these within the SMA structure means that advisors will get access to a wider range of assets that can be held in the SMA structure, which could be term deposits, it could be annuities, it could be private markets, it could be alternative assets. There's a lot more flexibility coming in terms of what SMAs can hold. And also like around the customizability of SMAs, you know, being able to completely brand an SMA and its related collateral as your practices SMA, being able to, you know, work with a manager to build a bespoke SMA that becomes available on the platform, or being able to access the SMAs already on the platform, but tailor it further to your practices, you know, investment philosophy. There's a lot of, you know, technology and a lot of product flexibility coming through that essentially will mean that for more advisors, you have access to an SMA that operates exactly the way you want it to.
So much innovation, so much happening in the space, isn't there?
Yes. It's a very exciting time. Like, this is an industry that's been growing at pace for many, many years. And there's still quite a few advisors in the market who are interested in beginning to start using SMAs in the near future. So, you know, we'd expect to see further growth to continue.
Rishabh, thank you so much for your time. That was an excellent explainer. And hopefully we can come back to talk more on managed accounts in the future.
Thank you very much, Karen. It's been a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.